You can sit down. Yeah. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's really a pleasure to be here. My model is going to be different than slightly different than Sven's model in two respects. On the first hand, we complicate along certain dimensions. For example, we have a utility of intermediate consumption. We worry about inflation. We worry about labor income. Some things that we do want to worry when we're looking at mortgage choice. But, of course, we have to simplify along other dimensions. And these other dimensions were most important. We just focus on the choice between fixed and adjustable rate mortgages. And we don't allow also the investor to choose combinations of the two, which was Sven's main point. So sort of to motivate the issue of mortgage choice and the importance of this, I should say this is joint work with John Campbell, who was my advisor at Harvard and he's a professor at Harvard. What got us started on this work is the following picture. This picture shows for the U.S. population the proportion of household assets in real estate and stocks. We've talked a lot about stocks today, about the issues about the return on stocks, how to benchmark, how to worry about after-tax returns. But when you actually look at households' wealth, real estate is much more important than stocks. What is shown in this graph on the horizontal axis is the distribution of wealth in the population, wealth percentiles, from the very poor households to the very rich ones. On the vertical axis, we measure the percentage importance of both stocks and real estate in the portfolio of households. Two issues that can be learned from this table. First, from this picture. First, very poor households don't own either stocks or real estate. They rent and they don't have money to invest in stocks. As soon as the households start owning some real estate, and Moshe is probably somewhere around here, it becomes very important in the portfolio. Okay? So much more important than for stocks. It's about 60% the importance of real estate. For stocks, even for the richest households, is around 20 to 40%. Of course, for stocks, it measures a lot when you measure it. This is in 89. The red line is in 98. What you see there is the run-up in equity prices in the 90s. Okay? If you'd measure the importance of stocks nowadays, you'd see the stock lines being lower and the real estate is not gotten a measure so far, so it would probably be higher because this is the percentage. So the idea is that we do have to worry about real estate if you're looking at the risks facing households, and these potential risks are more important than the risks associated with stock investments. At least this is what this picture suggests. So we got started on this project, and the issue that we were trying to look at is not so much real estate per se, but is the issue of the mortgage contract associated with real estate. Okay, when households decide to buy a house, they have to choose which sort of mortgage contract to choose from. Okay? And if you start looking around, there is many, many types of mortgage contracts that you can look at. And this kind of made us think when we first started the paper. You can basically classify them into two major categories: adjustable rate and fixed rate mortgages. And that's essentially what we are doing in this paper, trying to figure out which one should you choose and under which circumstance should you choose one or the other. The next thing that we do is we take a step further and say, what about if we have inflation index mortgages? Are these helpful or not? Are they helpful because of what, for which reasons? That's the other thing that we do. We will compare both adjustable rate and fixed rates to inflation index fixed rate mortgages. Just to sort of tell you a little bit about the importance of educating households in respect to their mortgage choices, right now in the UK there is some debate because of the following. In the 90s, some banks came up with the following product, which they call some endowment mortgages. And the idea is that households will take a mortgage, and instead of using mortgage payments to pay down their debt, these mortgage payments were invested in stocks. It was a great product. Every household should have gone for this product, at least that was telling at the time, and everyone was happy until the last year when these households started getting these letters saying that they would have to put a lot more money in to give a lot more money to the bank, otherwise they would lose their house. Right? So the idea is that it is important to educate households in terms of the risks that they face in different types of mortgage products. And essentially what we are trying to look here is to try to look at the risks that households face in adjustable rate and fixed rate mortgages. Where do we want to go with this research, trying to incorporate stocks and bonds also in the portfolio? But this is not done in the paper so far. Okay. What is one important element that you have to take into account when you decide the type of mortgage is labor income risk. Okay. When you take out a mortgage, how are you going to make your mortgage payments? You rely on your labor income. So this is going to be an important feature of our model, and essentially what we are doing here is solving a dynamic model of the consumption choices of a household. A household that takes out a mortgage, and then it has to decide how much to consume, how much to save, and so on. Our fixed rate mortgage has an option to refinance. There is a prepayment option, very much like in the US, there is a prepayment option. So in this respect, it's different than in Norway. And we try to make our model realistic as possible. We try to incorporate second loans. In this meaning, if household has accumulated sufficiently housing equity, it can just take out a second loan. Okay? Just to give you a preview of our results, and since there is not much time, I probably don't get around to showing all of them, let me just tell you what are our main results and what is the intuition. First of all, we get that a nominal fixed rate mortgage without an option to refinance is a very risky asset. In what sense is it risky? It is risky in the sense that you lock in an interest rate, and then interest rates can turn out to be higher or lower. Okay? If interest rates turn out to be higher, you gain. But if interest rates turn out to be lower because inflation turns out to be low, you lose. Okay? So the value of your real debt, the real value of your debt, is highly sensitive to movement in inflation. And in this sense, the nominal fixed rate mortgage is a very risky contract. There is wealth risk in it. The prepayment option protects homeowners against one side of this risk, the risk that the interest rates fall. If that happens, they can just refinance. Okay? But of course, this prepayment option is expensive. They have to pay for that up front. And so therefore, that increases the cost of the fixed rate mortgage relative to the adjustable rate mortgage. On the other end, you have that the adjustable rate mortgage is a safe contract in the sense that its value is not affected greatly by inflation. Okay? So what is the risk then of an adjustable rate mortgage? The risk of an adjustable rate mortgage is the short-term variability in cash payments. There is the cash flow risk. Where does this variability come from? Where does this risk come from? It comes from the fact that when you expect inflation to be higher in the next year or so, then interest rates will go up already today because they incorporate expectations about inflation. Okay? So as soon as expected inflation is higher, interest rates will go up, and your mortgage payments will also go up. But if the price level has not yet increased, there is a short period in which your real mortgage payments will be high. Okay? So there is sort of a cash flow risk. There is the risk that your cash flow, that your real mortgage payments will be high, and that will force you to reduce consumption. Okay? And this is the risk associated with an adjustable rate mortgage. It's a sort of cash flow risk. It's temporary high or low real mortgage payments because of movements in expected inflation. Of course, mobility affects also mortgage choice. Why? If you know you're likely to move in the near future, then the option to refinance is not really very valuable, and therefore you're likely to go for the contract that offers the current, the lowest current interest rate. It can be one or the other, depending on whether interest rates are high or are expected to fall. Okay? So these two first types of risks are very intuitive, and as you might expect. So fixed rate mortgage, wealth risk, adjustable rate mortgage, cash flow risk. Okay. As we'll see, inflation index mortgages will allow you to get rid of the wealth risk and the cash flow risk simultaneously, and that's why they are good. They're very helpful in the context of our model. So if anything, this paper is trying to push the idea that inflation index mortgages will allow it to get rid of both risks, so it's the best of both worlds. And and is also quantifying these effects. Okay? Some of you might have already have the intuition for the effects of adjustable rate mortgage, of the risks of adjustable rate mortgages, fixed rate mortgages, but it's important to quantify these effects. And that's, in that respect, the major contribution of this paper is to quantify these effects in a model that is realistically parameterized and from the data. Okay, let me tell you just a little bit about the model. So the household buys a house and takes out a loan. We don't look anymore at the issue about choice. The house is fixed. The size is fixed. Its value fluctuates over time, and that is important because it determines how much additional money you can borrow or not. But the house size is fixed. In each period, the household is going to choose consumption, and utility function is a standard power utility. The household is risk averse. Okay. What about interest rates? So there is inflation risk, there is real interest rate risk, and then this is all in logs. Then nominal interest rates, short interest rates, are equal to real interest rates plus expected inflation. Very much, very standard. Okay. What about long-term rates? Long-term rates are just an average of expected future short rates. It's just called the expectation hypothesis of interest rates. Okay. It is important to notice that in the context of this expectation hypothesis, the excess return on long-term over short-term rates is not predictable. Why don't we want to have some predictability in this thing? Because of the following. If you read through some of the financial press, it's very frequent, they say, you should lock in interest rates now because interest rates are very low. Okay? This startup statement implicitly assumes that you are able, also are somewhat able to predict the movements in interest rates, which we don't believe that the typical household is able to do. So we wanted to make sure that there is no predictability in our setting. Okay. So what happens to the mortgage contract? So essentially, you take out a loan, the value of your house minus the down payment, and then your real mortgage payment in a fixed rate mortgage is just the amount that you took out of the loan divided by the annuity factor and also by the price level. It's divided by the price level because we want to have a real mortgage payments. So, and from here you can see what is the inflation risk that you face with a fixed rate mortgage. That if the price level turns out to be very high, your real mortgage payment is very low. On the other hand, if the price level turns out to be low because inflation was low, your real mortgage payments will turn out to be very high. So real mortgage payments in a fixed rate mortgage are very sensitive to the price level. How do we model fixed rate mortgage interest rates? It's just the rate on a bond with a similar maturity plus a premium, fixed premium that we calibrate from the data. Okay? On an adjustable rate mortgage, you have that the relevant interest rate is the short rate, so 1 year interest rate is a short rate plus a premium over this short-term bond interest rate. Okay, so this is with respect to interest rates. So very simple model for interest rates. What do we do with the index mortgages? What we do in the index mortgages exactly the same thing, except that we are locking in real interest rates. Okay? We are fixing the mortgage payments in real terms so that we adjust with the price level. Okay. Labor income risk. I've talked about the importance of labor income risk, and essentially we have a stochastic process for labor income, which essentially is fairly realistic. There is a deterministic component that we calibrate to get the amp shape in earnings over life, and then there is two shocks. One is a random walk, so one of them has persistence, and the other one is purely transitory. So you can think about shocks that are just transitory, persistent, and again, we calibrate these things to the data. House prices, there is house price risk. House prices matter because you can borrow, if you accumulate sufficient housing equity, you can borrow, you can obtain additional loans that will allow you to smooth your consumption. And that's why we have here the issue of house price risk. So in essence, you can take out a second loan if you have accumulated sufficient housing equity. Okay. We incorporate also taxation, and we allow for mortgage interest deductibility. And we also look at the issue of moving through a moving probability P that the household just terminates the mortgage contract and goes somewhere. So this is a very complicated dynamic problem to solve. There's quite a few state variables, and there is the stress variables are consumption, how much to take out in a second loan, and whether to refinance or not the fixed rate mortgage. Solution technique, backwards induction, dynamic programming, it's fairly standard what we are doing. We spend quite a bit of time parameterizing the model. We want to make it to have this model as realistic as possible. We use interest rate data from 62 to 99, and we also use a panel that is available for the US, which is panel study of income dynamics, to parameterize interest house price processes and labor income processes. Let me just tell you a little bit about the parameters that we are using. So this is table one in the paper, mean log inflation, standard deviation of log inflation. This is the persistence parameter in inflation, mean real interest rate, and standard deviation of the real interest rate, labor income parameters, standard deviation of temporary shocks, persistent shocks, and the parameters relative to house prices. Okay. You could parameterize this to other countries. You could parameterize this to Canada. You could look at different scenarios. This is scenarios for the U.S. These are the parameters related to the model. Let me just emphasize what the premiums are. The fixed rate mortgage premium over the long-term bond is 1.6%, and the adjustable rate mortgage premium over the short-term bond is 1%. So there is a slight difference that comes, of course, from the value of the option to refinance. Again, you could look at the solution for other parameters. Let me just then show you what is the average income that we have. And this average income is, again, parameterized from the data. And it reflects the fact that early in life, households expect future labor income to be higher, and so that they are borrowing constrained. They like to have more funds early in life. So we try to be as realistic as possible from the data in order to get our quantities and try to quantify the effect. I think this is an important contribution of the paper. Let me now go to the results in the interest of time. I'm going to show you two types of results. The first one is the utility distribution for the population as a whole in our model. And the second one is just like Sven was doing, just computing consumption equivalent variations to see how much better off are households in one type of contract as opposed to the other contract. So this first one is the benchmark utility distribution. On the horizontal axis, what we have is the 1% of the population that is worse off in our model. On the here is the 99th percentile of the population that is better off. On the vertical axis, we just measure utility. We got this for three different types of mortgage contracts. The first one is an adjustable rate mortgage. The second one is a fixed rate mortgage where we just eliminate the option to refinance by setting the refinancing cost to a very high value. And the third one is a refinance, a fixed rate mortgage with a refinance cost of $1,000, $1,000. Okay. And what you see from here is that the median household is better off with an adjustable rate mortgage than with a fixed rate mortgage. You see the blue bar measures the utility for the adjustable rate mortgage contract. Okay. In fact, this is true for almost all households up to the 10% that are worse off. But where does the risk of the fixed adjustable rate mortgage kicks in? It kicks in the fact that if you're in the worst off situation, then your penalty with an adjustable rate mortgage is really high. So it turns out that in our model, most households are better off with an adjustable rate mortgage, but if you are in the bottom 5% or so of the population, you're really in a bad shape with an adjustable rate mortgage. Okay. In essence, maybe looking at the following table summarizes this better, because this looks at the equivalent variations, average welfare gains for the whole population. And this table shows the average welfare gains of the fixed rate mortgage over adjustable rate mortgages for different values of risk aversion, for different values or sizes of the house, and for different levels of labor income risk. Okay? first thing to notice is that the more risk averse you are, the better off you are with a fixed rate mortgage and an adjustable rate mortgage. The larger your house relative to your income, the better you are with a fixed rate mortgage relative to an adjustable rate mortgage. The higher your labor income risk, the higher the variance of your income shocks, the better off you are with a fixed rate mortgage than with an adjustable rate mortgage. So if you're a merchant and you have, or a finance professional, have very little variance in your labor income, you're somewhere there and you'd like to go for an adjustable rate mortgage. Second thing that you can see from here is that the quantities vary tremendously. And the reason why I have that is that we have quite a bit of frictions in our model. When you introduce frictions in our model, you can get large differences in utility, and that's they are showing up here. The other thing that you can see is that the refinancing option is not very sensitive. The value of it is not very sensitive to these parameters. Most of it comes from the risks, cash flow risk versus and not so much from the value of the refinancing option. Okay, so what happens if you allow inflation-indexed contracts? Do they do better? Don't they do better? And here we look at two types of inflation-indexed contracts. The first one is where the real payments are declining. Okay, why we do this? Because in the ARM and the FRM, real mortgage payments are on average declining. So if you just want to look at the risk characteristics of the contract, then this one is probably a better thing to compare to these other two. But you could also have an inflation-indexed mortgage with fixed real mortgage payments. And on average, your mortgage payments, nominal mortgage payments, will go up. Why do these things matter? These things matter because households are borrowing constrained. So if they are borrowing constrained, meaning their income is lower in life than later in life, maybe they want to have lower mortgage payments early in life as opposed to later in life. So we look at both of them. And the basic message from this figure here is that both types of inflation index mortgages dominate for all individuals, meaning across the whole distribution of the population, nominal and adjustable rate mortgage contracts, which is thought was a pretty strong case in favor of inflation index mortgage. How large are the gains? The gains, this table shows, this first column is the nominal fixed rate mortgage over adjustable rate mortgage, and the next two columns is the inflation index fixed rate mortgage over adjustable rate mortgages. The gains, again, are increasing in the level of risk aversion, in the size of house relative to income, and in the variance of income, but the basic point to take out from here is that these gains are very, very large, okay? Particularly for high levels of risk aversion, for large house sizes relative to income, and for high variance of income shocks. Okay? What we do in the paper next is, okay, let's look at some robustness checks. For example, a basic robustness check. We calibrated interest rates from 1962 to 1999. During this period, maybe inflation risk is higher than what we expected to be in the future. What if inflation risk is actually lower? So what we did then is, for example, calibrate our interest rate process and inflation process for the period from 1984 to 2000, where inflation risk was lower. And, of course, these numbers go down, but they are still significant. The results are in the paper. We also looked at other robustness checks, and the basic message is there is always significant gains to inflation index mortgages relative to adjustable rate and fixed rate mortgages. I understand that for a practitioner, you're trying to sell inflation index mortgages that in the current type of situation where inflations are very, very low and interest rates are very low, might seem like a weird thing to do. But if you start thinking about it, a mortgage contract is typically 15 years, 20 years, maybe longer. Do you know what's going to happen 2 or 3 years down the road? Do you know what's going to happen if the U.S. and the allies decide to attack Iraq? What will happen to the oil price? What will happen to prices? There's lots of uncertainty in very long contracts like mortgage contracts. And I think this is an important thing to have in the back of our minds. So in this paper, we address the problem of mortgage choice. This is a very basic problem. It's basic because almost every one of us has to face this problem at least once in our lifetime, but at the same time, it's very complex. Complex why? because there's many considerations that are pretty much at the frontier of finance theory. Uncertainty and inflation and real interest rates, borrowing constraints, illiquid assets, insurable risk in labor income, and also the need to plan for a long horizon. All these things per se can give you quite a bit of trouble in terms of trying to address them, put even more trying to put them together in a mold. And of course, we have to do simplifications to be able to do so. What we've shown in this paper is that the form of the mortgage contract can have large quantitative effects on household affairs, and we need to worry about these effects. Of course, the exact form of the welfare effect depend on the parameterization that we are using. We try to be as realistic as possible and get it right as much as possible, but this, we think that this conclusion that smaller houses relative to income, more stable income, and low risk aversion, and also higher probability of moving, should lead households to prefer adjustable rate mortgage are pretty robust across parameterization. And we also saw that inflation index mortgage are good, give large welfare gains for this period, and they also give significant welfare gains for other periods. So let me finish here. I promised Moshe I would be brief, and I try to be as much as possible. Thank you.